This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, less than 1 week before the inauguration of President-elect Donald J. Trump, we examine the U.S. political landscape in 2017 as Republicans control both chambers of Congress and the executive branch. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The 115th U.S. Congress convened this month, and dozens of new members were sworn in. Despite being in the minority in the House of Representatives and the Senate, Democrats seem ready to fight President-elect Donald Trump on several fronts, his controversial cabinet nominees to start, and his vow to repeal President Barack Obama's signature domestic achievement, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. On the other hand, Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan is ready to make his agenda Trump's agenda. President-elect Trump said this week in his first news conference in nearly 6 months that repealing and replacing Obamacare should happen essentially simultaneously, even in the same day, week, or hour. Well, that will be almost impossible to achieve due to complex Senate rules, united Democratic opposition, and substantive policy disagreements among Republicans. However, the first order of business for the Senate has been to hold confirmation hearings for an array of President-elect Trump's cabinet picks, such as Senator Jeff Sessions for Attorney General, Rex Tillerson, former CEO of ExxonMobil for Secretary of State, and Congressman Mike Pompeo for Director of the CIA. And with less than 1 week before Donald Trump is slated to be inaugurated as the 45th president of the United States, many questions still remain about Russian interference in the U.S. election. The U.S. intelligence community has unanimously concluded that Russia was behind the hack of the Democratic National Committee as part of a larger influence campaign aimed at first at undermining faith in democratic institutions and then at helping elect Donald Trump. Mr. Trump grudgingly acknowledged the fact that Russia meddled in the November election for the first time in his news conference, but downplayed its significance. Nonetheless, the fallout from the Russian-backed cyber attack against the DNC and the subsequent dumping of damaging emails via WikiLeaks is unlikely to go away. In addition, U.S. Republican and Democratic senators say they want to slap a wide range of sanctions on Russia over its cyber activities and actions in Syria and Ukraine. A bill with similar provisions is being written in the House of Representatives. These measures could set up a showdown between Congress and President-elect Trump, who has repeatedly praised Vladimir Putin and criticized intelligence officials for findings linking Putin to influence in the 2016 election. And never has an incoming commander-in-chief had so many conflict of interest and foreign entanglement questions as Donald Trump, who owns large real estate and licensing businesses with holdings around the world. In his news conference, President-elect Trump insisted that he will not divest himself of his vast business empire, but plans to turn over all of his business operations to a trust controlled by his two oldest sons and a longtime associate, a proposal that falls far short of recommendations of ethics experts in both political parties. Well, with us to discuss all of this and the politics and policies likely to dominate Washington in 2017 are two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a centrist policy group based here in Washington. And Igor Volsky, he's deputy director for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Previously, he was the managing editor of Think Progress, a progressive blog at the Center for American Progress, a liberal think tank based here in Washington. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Fortier, a lot to digest, a lot to discuss. The congressional agenda, first off, talk about how you see this 115th Congress going forward with a new president.
Well, as you noted in your introduction, there's just nothing going on in Washington here. It's sort of a ho-hum time. Putting joking aside, I do think you see Donald Trump obviously is going to be a different kind of president. All of the characteristics during the campaign haven't disappeared. But there have been some ways in which I think he has become a more traditional figure, at least in part. Many of the nominees that he has picked that are going forward, they're not probably so different than a typical Republican nominee would have. So the process has seemed a bit crazy. We're all watching Trump Tower to see who shows up in the lobby. But at the end of the day, the nominees, I think, are people who look something like more traditional Republicans. Similarly with Congress, there still are dissenters and people who are not in the Republican Party who are not thrilled with Donald Trump. But I think most of Congress has accepted this surprising result in the election as an opportunity to move forward on the Republican agenda. And there will be significant differences about details, but big picture, both the president and Republicans in Congress want to accomplish the difficult task of repealing Obamacare and the more difficult task of replacing it. Donald Trump has held to his guns to say that he wants to get the wall going, starting work on border security, on immigration. And I think you'll see also with the Supreme Court nominee and other things coming up that Republicans can't agree on, even though they're difficult to do, will be things that are on the agenda early on, despite all of the things that you mentioned in your introduction.
Turning to you, Igor, for your take on what we're liable to look forward to, do you agree with John that on the big picture, at least the Republican-controlled Congress is in sync with President-elect Trump, but perhaps differ on the details? How do you see things?
No, and I don't envy John. I think he's going to have a difficult position in the next 4 years trying to bring some sanity or see some sanity in what's going to be happening with this administration, this Congress. But they're totally out of sync. So you take an issue like Obamacare, for instance. Yes, there's agreement. They all want to get rid of it. They do not want to replace it. If they wanted to replace it, they would have had a plan to actually replace it. They have no plan. You have the president-elect saying in his first press conference that you mentioned that they're going to do this at the same time. You have congressional leaders saying, well, no, we're going to first repeal it. Then maybe in 2-3 years, we'll replace it with something else. So there's no agreement at all. And that's really a key promise where there should be agreement of if you ran on this idea and you got votes because of this idea, they should actually have a plan. There is no plan. And, you know, that's going to be really challenging to deliver on something they promised to do on day one. They have absolutely no way at all of doing that.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. Any other legislative priorities you want to underscore to look forward to?
Well, just to focus on Obamacare for a minute, I think that is going to be the thing that we are talking about the most in the first couple of months. And I at least go a ways down where the direction that Igor is going in, that it is difficult and Republicans have not coalesced around a replacement. And there's the difficulty of not only the replacement, but a transition period, that there are people who are relying on what is in place now and they will need some time to transition out of. That being said, I think there actually are a lot of plans. There's not a plan, and those plans are not so dissimilar, and that Republicans are, it's in their interest to come around and find something. You see the outlines of what that might be, and it will take a while, and it will be controversial, but I guess I think, Republicans, again, have seen this as a gift to have all the levers of power. And the biggest thing they have promised and wanted to say is that they've moved away from Obamacare and moved to something else. I'm not as cynical as some who say they just will replace Obamacare with another Obamacare. But they clearly are going to have to retain some elements. They're not going to do everything they wanted to do. The money isn't necessarily there. But I think the opportunities are there for them to come to some agreement.
Back to you, Igor Volsky. Through the lens of Obamacare, let's talk about the role of the Democrats, who are now in the minority in all branches of government. We have a new Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, a bit of a different style from his predecessor, Harry Reid. Talk about what the Democrats' role will be in this Congress, whether it's vis-a-vis Obamacare, either pushing back, trying to retain elements of Obamacare that are good. How do you see them either fighting back or pushing back?
Well, I think it's been heartening to a lot of people to see the Senate Minority Leader really stand firm on not negotiating, for instance, with Republicans when they work on their replacement, whatever that replacement will look like, sending the message that if you break it, you own it. And I think, there's going to be a lot of work, certainly in the Congress and outside of the Congress from progressive groups, to ensure that the Democrats really stand firm in opposing the regressive Trump agenda when it comes to, of course, the health care law and across the board, but also put forward big, bold, progressive solutions, which I think John actually may agree with me here. You look at the polling numbers and on the actual policies, the most popular Trump policy was actually protecting Medicare and Social Security from any kinds of changes. Trump ran on it. And you look at the numbers, that was the most popular thing that Trump said in terms of policy. And you actually go, all the way down in terms of policy background checks, for instance. 89% of Trump voters want to see background checks.
For
gun purchases in America. So when you look at what voters actually supported in terms of how what the government does impacts their lives, I would say that they are on board with a far more progressive agenda than they are with the kind of trickle-down approach that conservative Republicans take to economics.
If I could jump in, I guess I don't think we're going in the direction that Igor mentioned, but I do think there's some Trump things that are not traditionally Republican, and those with some extra spending, either on infrastructure or just the willingness to not make deficits as high a priority. Even the Freedom Caucus and others in Congress have essentially agreed that maybe with a Trump presidency, they will ease off a little bit on their fiscal conservatism. So I think you will see some movement in a direction that you might not have seen from a more traditional Republican candidate. On Chuck Schumer, I think just generally people thought he's more of a deal maker, could work with the Republicans more so than Harry Reid. But the practical political situation, I think Igor is right, that Democrats feel they should unite and be strongly in opposition. And I think you'll see that not only in policies, but on all these nominees, who most of them I think will get through because Republicans only need a majority. But I think you will see very high numbers of Democrats opposing almost all of the nominees, where often you see many of the nominees get bipartisan support.
If the Democrats do unite in opposition, push back Igor Volsky, couldn't they be subject to the same kinds of criticism as Republicans who kept pushing back constantly on President Obama's legislative priorities?
No, because the difference is that in his first year, 2 years in office, President Obama worked very hard to engage Republicans. I mean, that's just a fact. You look at an issue like Obamacare, again, I mean, Max Baucus, who led that effort in the Senate Finance Chair at the time, bent over backwards to get Republicans to support that bill. You look at immigration reform, for instance, that was actually a bill in 2013 that did get bipartisan support in the Senate. It didn't even come up for a vote in the House. So the difference is Democrats and President Obama tried to work with Republicans initially. President Trump has shown exactly zero indication that he's interested in working with Democrats or Chuck Schumer.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier. He's a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky, from whom you just heard. He's deputy director for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We are discussing the politics and substance of the 2017 U.S. legislative agenda in the wake of a new administration. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Rikwende Kifas from Abuja, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier, to talk about perhaps an issue on which Republicans differ with the president-elect as well as Democrats, and that is this question of ties with Russia and the perception of Russia as a true geopolitical adversary. It's a very complicated topic. We see this coming up in the Rex Tillerson hearings. You have a Republican Senator Marco Rubio really questioning him on his personal and business ties with Russia when he was CEO of ExxonMobil. You have John McCain, senator from Arizona, and of course Lindsey Graham, all three and others at odds, one could say, with President-elect Trump. And then, of course, then there's these allegations swirling that there may be ties. We don't know. We do know, though, the intelligence has confirmed that the Russians did interfere in the U.S. presidential election on the side of Donald Trump.
I think you're right. There's disagreement with the president and many in Congress. It's a little hard to tell with Donald Trump where he's going to end on this. He doesn't have foreign policy experience and background in a traditional sense. He's dealt with other countries in a business way. But I do think he is portraying himself as somebody who is more of a realist. And what that means in practice, I think we will see. But some of that is that he isn't prejudging his relationship with Russia. That is very much against, certainly, Mitt Romney was 180 degrees in the other direction and 4 years ago, and many Republicans in Congress have been very suspicious. And, of course, Russia's actions have gotten worse over the time of the Obama administration. So I do think it is an issue that will come up, but I also think it's a little bit of a black box. I don't accept that Donald Trump is necessarily a pro-Russian politician, but it's somebody who has instincts that at least he's open to working with them. And it's complicated by this idea that certainly the Russians had a favorite in the race. They preferred Donald Trump. They hacked John Podesta of the Democratic Clinton campaign's emails. They tried to put things out in public that made Hillary Clinton look worse and Donald Trump look better. I think Trump is a bit defensive about that now, but I'm not sure that that means that he is going to be working in lockstep with Russia, other than we don't know as much as we should.
Quick corollary before I turn to Igor, and that is President-elect Donald Trump's denigrating still of U.S. intelligence agencies, all 17 of which have concluded unanimously that the Russians hacked the DNC and then they leaked these emails to WikiLeaks. And I think that is the key difference, because they also presumably hacked the RNC, the Republican National Committee, but the difference being they selectively leaked these emails from the Democratic National Committee to hurt Hillary Clinton. And while President-elect Trump has acknowledged that the Russians were behind the hacking, he always qualifies that by saying, well, the Chinese do it, the North Koreans do it. But this is very different, because we're looking at the dumping, which has potentially influenced the election. What about his relationship with U.S. intelligence communities, even as he continues to criticize them, one would say even disparage them?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. The relations with the intelligence community are frayed. He has moved in the direction of admitting that the Russians had some role here, somewhat grudgingly. Some of that grudgingness is coming from the fact that there are those on the opposite side of the aisle who are using this to try to undermine legitimacy of his presidency, and he is going to become the president. That is ultimately not an issue, that he will become the president. But I do think, we hope, that as he brings his own people, and he comes into office, I mean, he's in a funny position now of not being president, not being in charge of the intelligence agencies. As he brings his own people in, we would hope that those relationships are repaired, because that will be a serious problem for him if he spends his time fighting with his own intelligence agencies.
Igor Volsky, I'd like you to weigh on all these controversies. President Trump's continued sort of friendly overtures to Vladimir Putin, notwithstanding, we have concluded through our intelligence agencies that Vladimir Putin and senior officials of the Russian government were behind the hacking and the dumping of these emails that influenced the election. And then, of course, his denigrating of U.S. intelligence officials. What does that portend?
You know, Carol, frankly, I'm a little disappointed to hear John kind of sweep these kinds of allegations under the rug and say, you know, it's a problem, we should maybe look into it. You know, we hope that he will change as he's president. I mean, I certainly hope so, too. But the fact of the matter is, what we really need is an independent, bipartisan commission to look into exactly what happened with Russia. Because what we do know, we know three things. We know that there's a whole host of connections between the Trump campaign and Russia. We know that, and I did this over the weekend, I went through all Trump speeches in the last month of the campaign in October, and he used the WikiLeaks revelations 164 times in October. That's more than five times a day. And he used it as really the basis of his case against Hillary Clinton to substantiate this notion that she's not a good leader, that she's weak, that Putin doesn't like her. He actually urged people to go and read this kind of information. So this notion that this isn't a big deal, that this didn't sway the election, is absolute garbage, and we all need to dispense with it and really look seriously at what happened in this election. The reports that we hear that are currently unsubstantiated about Russians having all kinds of leverage around President-elect Trump is also very serious. It's why we need an independent investigation. And if there are no connections, and if Trump is so innocent, then that's what this investigation will show, and we'll all move on. And then just quickly, on this disagreement with intelligence agencies and the way he presents these intelligence agencies. Let's be very clear. People will die when Donald Trump doesn't listen to intelligence agencies, when he doesn't take their threats seriously because he thinks they're fake or they're against him or whatever the case may be. This is incredibly dangerous. In the world we live in, this is incredibly dangerous. And I hope, John, that conservative commentators who come on these programs and on television take this seriously. And don't put this in the same box as the kinds of conversations we've had over the last 8 years, where it's left versus right. And we say, you know, if we're on the right, we kind of try to make things look better for our side. I mean, these problems go to the heart of our country, to the heart of our national security. And we have to be united that what's happened here with Russia and the way Donald Trump treats our intelligence agencies is simply inappropriate.
Just a quick question. What is the likelihood of an independent investigation with just days before the inauguration? We know that the FBI is investigating some of this as we speak.
Well, the president is doing a review now. President Obama ordered a review. That should be done before he leaves office. You have several of the Senate committees doing investigations as well. Senator McCain have called for an independent investigation, but Republican leadership has not let that happen. They're hoping, the senators are, that as more revelations come out, that they will change their mind.
All right.
And we'll won't make Igor happy, but the President-elect Trump has said he will have his own investigation as he comes into office. Of course, that is not independent. Look, as these investigations come out, more is told. We will see whether there is pressure enough to have an independent investigation. But I don't expect it will happen early. If it happens, it will happen because of some of these pre-investigations that will lead to other things.
But John, do you think we need an independent investigation?
I'm not 100% sure. I don't know what it accomplishes. I would be open to that, but I guess I think we've got things on the table. We will learn more. I mean, I think we should be strong and united in saying foreign countries should not be messing around in our elections. And while it's true they didn't mess around with votes, that would be worse. I mean, we shouldn't be happy that they are trying to influence public opinion. But I guess I would not go as far as I think Igor's comments are undermining the legitimacy of the new president. And that new president has every right to say he won the election and there were some bad factors that hindered Hillary Clinton. There were some bad factors that had Donald Trump. I don't think they're equal. And certainly the Russians were only playing on one side. But I do think that we shouldn't make this all about undermining the legitimacy of a new president coming into office.
You know, that's not fair. I'm happy to acknowledge that Donald Trump won the Electoral College. Absolutely, he did. And the rules say that he's now president. But what I also want to acknowledge, that what allowed him to make the case against Hillary Clinton, and I think you can acknowledge the same thing, are the leaked documents that the Russians gave WikiLeaks, and then he referenced 164 times in the month of October alone.
All right, let me just say before we go to the very last question that many on both sides of the aisle have advocated that an independent investigation take place to de-link this from politics. Nobody's saying that Mr. Trump didn't win the Electoral College, he won the election. But it's important, many say, to investigate Mr. Trump's personal and financial ties to Russia, any potential coordination that may have occurred between his campaign aides and Russia, and the existence of compromising information allegedly obtained by Russia to blackmail him. So we shall see where this goes. But let's close by potential conflicts of interest between President-elect Trump and his business ties and his duties as commander-in-chief, John Fortier, because we know that he has handed off his business operations to his two sons and other sort of more superficial types of separations. But this doesn't seem to satisfy most ethics officials on both sides of the aisle.
Well, look, Donald Trump is a different figure than we've ever had before. He has interests around the world. One could obviously imagine scenarios where those interests come into play when we are dealing with foreign nations. So it's a very, very difficult question. I also think it is harder for him to completely divest himself of the entire business, which is what I think some people are calling for. And so I don't rule out the possibility that there's something short of just divesting altogether, that he finds a way to sever his link and sever his interest with his business without completely selling this, because it's something that is intimately connected with him and his family.
And let's be clear, last word to you, Igor Volsky. President-elect Trump said, and we know that for the president, the so-called conflict of interests, the same level of scrutiny doesn't apply to the president as does to other members or other officials in the executive branch. But at the same time, as I said, we have never had a president-elect come in with so many foreign entanglements and conflicts of interest, which at the end of the day could affect U.S. national security. I think that's the bottom line. So how do you see what Mr. Trump has proposed to, in a sense, separate himself from his personal and financial ties, and what you think needs to happen?
Well, I think we should be very clear about what's happening, and that is that Donald Trump is going to use the presidency to squeeze every penny possible to increase his wealth, the wealth of his family, over the course of the period that he's in the White House. I mean, that's why he's not divesting his investments, as all kinds of ethics experts on both sides have suggested is really the only way you can get out of this problem of conflicts of interest. He made the decision to run for president. And when you make that decision, you decide that you put country ahead of personal gain or any kind of business gain. Now he's going to try to have it both ways, and I think it's going to haunt him the rest of his presidency.
I'm afraid on that rather dubious note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier. He's political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky, deputy director for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Gentlemen, thanks as always for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Zubair El Taib. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.